Hey everybody, welcome to your Friday, February 28th Jumpcast, the only manga podcast to successfully overthrow an Eastern European president. Joining me this week are Mike Lemieux and Greg Jan.
How you doing?
I don't understand that reference.
Not at all.
Nope. You actually see his like presidential palace? He had like crucified birds.
Again, yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
There is. There's kind of a like civil war going on in Ukraine right now.
Oh, eh. That sucks for them.
Yeah, no. And then of course the most recent thing, which I haven't heard anything more about this, but it happened last night, was basically it looks like there were some unmarked militants who went into the Crimean, not embassy, but like one of the government buildings there, took it over and then raised the Russian flag. So, you know, they're not sure whether it's people who want to join Russia or whether it's part of the Russian military itself, but they're mobilizing on the border. And yeah, it's looking like there's going to be Russia invading Ukraine sometime soon.
Shooting gold medals at them.
The question is, do they have cryptids? That's just that's the best transition I could think of. That's all I had.
For illegal rare?
Yes. So let's give the background for illegal rare before we actually get into it.
Well, I guess the main thing is, we've mentioned them a couple times. There's a bunch of series that have been starting recently. There's four of them. The last one's coming out this week. But we're going to be discussing two of them right here at the start. And I think we've all read Illegal Rare, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you've read Stealth Symphony.
Yeah. I don't remember a great deal of the details, like people's names and that sort of stuff, but I'll be able to give an overview real quick. I do think one thing that'll be interesting is Illegal Rare and Stealth Symphony seem to be going for the exact same target market. So I'm going to suspect that both of them are going to split the vote and drop prematurely, and neither one of them is going to last terribly long because of that. But
so let's start with like the summary of what Illegal Rare is.
So
basically, there are cryptids like mermaids, owlmen,
Fantasy creatures.
Yeah.
It's Law & Order SVU, but the S stands for supernatural instead of special.
Or like the show Supernatural, but anime.
Yeah. With vampires.
Yes. And there's a special task force designed to protect the cryptids from people who are trying to sell them and capture them and chop them into pieces and become immortal.
Well, at the time that it starts, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Is trying to exist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, there's the one guy who has that bright idea. Because, humans being humans, we grind up strange things and use them for impotency cures and whatnot. So, of course, if there's fantastical creatures, we would totally exploit them.
And everyone looks like a Guilty Gear character.
Yeah.
So
I actually really like the art.
I actually really don't like the art.
You don't? Is this going to be another Takamagahara thing? Where
I didn't dislike Takamagahara's art. I think it held it back from being successful. I think this is going to do the same thing.
See, I don't think that that's the case because this is the same art style that was for Nura, and that went for over 200 chapters.
This was a Nura guy. Then.
Yeah, this is the same guy who did that, and the art style is very similar.
I was going to say this is just the first chapter. It might get better, but if this guy is long experienced.
Oh yeah, no. This is a person who has had his last series, which I think might have been his only series, but it went for over 200 chapters.
I think it's just so shoujo like at times, especially on Axel and the Little Mermaid girl.
I feel like Axel is like jokingly so, like Bishonen.
Like sometimes he's not, and sometimes he definitely is.
I think that's just how
he's got big eyes. Is
yeah.
What's
and he has like the gawked hair waft, and
I think that's just how Japanese people tend to do vampires.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
so he's their Edward Cullen, basically.
Isn't gawked like a I'm a vampire guy? So.
Yes, he thinks he's 200 years old.
Yeah, well, he is.
Yeah. In terms of his 15 minutes, sure.
So this first chapter basically deals with a missing persons case of an idol that turns out to be a mermaid, and we see Axel investigating her whereabouts with a little girl named, what was her name?
Nova?
Nova, yes.
Yeah. Who is the younger sister of
her.
Yeah.
And so we find out that Axel's power is he can taste someone's blood and then sort of figure out, get their memory from them?
Well, it's implied that that's his power, but I mean, it's really, I'm guessing this is one of the things that it just stems from the fact that he is a vampire, as we find
like,
out.
He can, like, place himself, like, I'm not sure if it was when the blood was lost or something, but he just kind of, like, flashbacks to important parts of...
Yeah,
he I assume it was, like, a genetic memory sort of thing, like, Assassin's Creed style.
So he's gonna go, God, he was on a statue at the start of it.
He was synchronizing.
That's so, how he was able to figure out where he was supposed to go, because he was totally lost.
That was a great joke that I liked, where they told him to just head east until he found the base, and he ended up at the ocean. I thought that
I want to point this out, because it has nothing to do with anything, but isn't Muir the detective look exactly like Zorro?
The regular dude?
Yeah, the detective they meet in the crime scene.
I'd say exactly. I mean, a little bit, maybe, but...
On the cover page, so...
Yeah.
I was thinking more like page 14, 13. But to me, like, it's the exact same face.
It's just a scowly person. Zorro's scowly.
So, Axel, you know, he discovered that the manager has been beating the mermaid, and...
Yeah, it's actually pretty,
It's pretty dark.
Yeah. No. Just gates, you know, oh, hey, here's a person who is being kept as a slave to be a muse for musician... And they beat her in front of her younger sister.
Yeah. And I guess we should say, like, thing of this manga is mermaids cannot talk when they have feet, which is totally a Little Mermaid thing.
No.
But it's also weird because, like, they're able to do it several times later.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was that they weren't able to talk when they had feet. I think it was that because their voices have an influencing power... the sister told the younger sister, told Nova, not to talk unless she finds a person she can trust.
Because she has to drink from this little flask to be able to talk.
It's really strange, like, at one point they establish it as a sort of rule, and then later, like, Nova follows it.
When in human form, they lose their voice.
Hmm.
It's on the page explaining mermaids.
Okay, yeah.
But mirror...
Wikipedia/mermaids.
Mirrored. Yeah, let's go watch that, Discovery Channel documentary about mermaids. Find out the real facts. But Mirror seems to be able to just talk. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if that's just if she's just exceptional or something.
Well, but... no, like when they first see her, she's in mermaid form because they had splashed her with water in her legs, right?
She's up and walking and talking by the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's just sipping from her flask off screen every time before she talks, but.
Yeah, that was one of the things that bothered me when I was reading this. Like, it seems like they threw out all the mermaid rules at the end.
So. I really like this. The only big disappointment for me is that Axel's way of fighting was a little lame.
That he just throws his fingernails and teeth?
Yeah. I don't know. That didn't strike me as all that cool.
I think well animated it could be interesting. Like, it could have a certain Cowboy Bebop flair to it, but...
Yeah, it does seem like it has that, like, fast, you know, just like... And everybody's dead thing, but...
Yeah.
But so, for the purposes of trying to, you know, seem badass and cool in a manga, not necessarily...
It was just like, he breaks off his teeth and then new ones grow, and he keeps the old teeth as weapons.
Okay, I finally figured out what bothers me about this. Axel reminds me of New Dante.
So I thought you liked that game.
Yeah.
Not really. No.
I've heard you say you love Devil May Cry.
Well, I'm caught there. So eventually they rescue the... Mermaid. Well, first the bad guy strip her and then put her in another top.
Yeah. Well, because the other one's all bloody and they need to make her look nice for the auction. So then Axel just like fucking kills all those guys.
Yeah.
And then the really cool part is he goes to the auction and declares like war on all the cryptic collectors.
Yeah, because it turns out he is the last black vampire, which I'm going to guess there's other types of vampires, but of that specific type.
Yeah.
So, you know, since these guys are obviously trying to, you know, complete their collections or whatever it is, he is the last one left of his type, and he is the Black Vampire King, so...
He's basically a shiny vampire. You know, shiny Pokemon.
So, if you want him, come and get him, but he's going to be, you know, hunting all of them at the same time.
It sets the stage for the series of, like, taking on these human traffickers, or monster traffickers. So, yeah, by the end of the series, the police division to protect illegal rares is established.
Yeah, does that, like, commissioner guy, what's his name? Because I keep wanting to just call him Scarface.
Who, the mask guy?
Yeah.
Fukuman, I think?
Yeah, Fukuman.
Yeah.
He hella looks like a Guilty Gear character.
Yep. Like, the design scene, like, it, I would be surprised if Ishitari wasn't involved in some way. Because these are really, really Guilty Gear-like.
Well, that just means they'll keep it around until they can make a fighting game. Get Arc Systems working on it.
Yeah, so Axel, you know, he gives the mermaids a place to stay, and Fukuman offers them a job, or the older one a job, of being the PR for this hidden police organization.
Basically, which I suppose, you know, having a idol be your PR person is not a bad place to start.
Basically, it's just, we need some TNA in this manga, so why don't you hang out?
And then Axel says cryptic things about people who he's lost.
Yeah, so I think it seemed to be, like, really feel checklisty of things that it needed to knock off in the first chapter to set the stage. But, like, I'm going to read the next couple chapters, see where it goes.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I want to see how it does without being a one-shot.
Yeah, it did kind of have that one-shot feeling to it, because, like, everything's wrapped up with kind of a bow by the end of it.
Yeah.
Of the illegal rare counter-protection unit being formed.
Plus, there are just characters in the background that, like, clearly he had grander designs for, but didn't have anything, like, he couldn't fit them in this chapter.
I mean, like, on that last page, like, here's people you've seen in the background, but
yeah,
they're just here
it's
now.
It's a pelican.
Yeah. It looks like a dodo, actually.
Oh, yeah, dodo.
See, it's an illegal rare.
Its meat tastes fantastic.
It does.
Yeah, but yeah, no, the, what was I going to say? I don't think that we're planning on picking this up and being a regular thing. We might mention it at some point in the future.
Well, maybe what you said about it and Self-Symphony splitting the votes made me think that we're not going to, because if it dies, I don't want to, like, have invested the time and do it.
Okay, so with Stealth Symphony, tell me if any of this sounds familiar. So there is a city someplace in the world, you know, whatnot, that has a whole bunch. It is the place where there is a whole bunch of fantastical element type things, like, say, wizards and dragons and that sort of stuff, you know,
like cryptids?
Fantastical creatures. Yes, located. So, like, that base premise for the thing is very similar. Now, in this one, there's a kid who had some sort of disease, and there was they used some device to cure him. What was the initial premise, but it was cursed. So he had to travel to this town to try and find a person who could remove the curse. And then it turns out what the curse is not actually doesn't sound like much of a curse. But whenever anything would attack him, it would protect him and return the damage twice as much. Which, you know, you're gonna have a curse. That's not a terribly bad one to have. It turns out that this city was originally founded by some dragon creatures, and there's a whole bunch of artifacts of theirs around. So, you know, there's treasure hunters going around the place trying to dig and find them. And one example that I remember is there was some, you know, thermos thing that would perpetually, you know, give out water. And so the guy who found it went to the middle of the desert and founded a country, which struck me as amusing. He goes there and hires a protection person basically to protect people in the city from him in case it could strike back. And there is and that is the mask, if you will. So it is the invisible man is the person, and he has that mask so people can tell where he is.
I'm glancing through this right now, and it is super anime.
Yeah.
How's the art?
Super anime.
It fits the fantastical element pretty well, but yeah, it is,
it,
I don't know.
It's reminding me of, have you seen Summer Wars?
I have. Yeah, I can see that similarity.
It's kind of got, like, all these, like, varying, not varying styles, like, it's a lot closer, but just...
It seems quite detailed from what I remember.
Yeah. I guess we should also note that this is in American Shonen Jump.
Yes. So this is an American weekly Shonen Jump. But anyway, what ends up happening is it's revealed that he isn't actually cursed. This is the device that he got was one of those, you know, dragon-made devices things. And, you know, there was a assassin that was hired to kill him. And basically they wanted to verify whether or not it actually was one. So they attached it to this kid, and now they're trying to kill him so that they can take it and sell it or do whatever. Which makes a ton of sense. So when he finds this out, it makes him incredibly angry, and then the thing basically starts turning him into a dragon. and he was going to destroy the entire city or something like that. And then I read this when it first came out, so it's been a couple days, and it didn't strike me all that much. Like, I preferred Illegal Rare between the two. But is stopped by his own nature, but the Invisible Man, it turns out, is an invisible dragon, and is like, I'm assuming, the last actual dragon that's still around. But the entire time he was basically saying, like, no matter what you do, I'm going to support you, even if that means destroying the world. And once more, it seemed a little rough around the edges. It seemed like it was still trying to find itself a little bit. And I don't know whether I'm overanalyzing this, because given the writer is the same person who did Bakano, Durarara, I keep looking for little hooks for weird things to be tying in and happen later on. It could easily turn into this incredibly contrived, awesome thing.
Like,
but I'm not. Yeah, but I'm not seeing that right now.
Yeah, I definitely see the Durarara style in it.
Well, no, he's like, not the artist at all.
Oh, he's not?
No.
Well, still, like, he's the writer, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's still got that kind of punk feeling to it.
Like, yeah. But so now the fact that is, there are these two series that are starting, 2 weeks apart from one another, that deal with fantastical creatures, which is not something that has been present in Jump at this time. I can see that they seem to be appealing to the same general area, even if they're taking different approaches in their methods of getting there. So because they are going head to head that way, I'm not sure either one of them is going to end up sticking around all that long.
I think Illegal Rare is going to be held back by the art. It's just too non-standard for Jump.
See, I don't buy that, just because Nura was in Jump and successful for a long time.
Yeah, there's an audience for, I think, Supernatural stuff, but two at once is kind of...
I mean, this is one of those things that came up in Bakuman, wasn't it? Was that, the when they were talking about Detective Trap and the other, case one that came out at the same time after they took their break. And because the two of them were struggling for the same votes, neither one of them was really able to stay up in the rankings.
Jump should know better than to run both of these at the same time.
I mean,
I agree.
We were talking about this before the cast, but some of the hearsay I've seen is that Isayama, the guy that does Attack on Titan, brought it to Shueisha first, and they passed on it saying it wasn't good enough for Jump, and then that has gone on to be crazy successful.
Now,
in fairness,
that
manga is pretty
rough.
Yeah.
The artwork is not all that great.
But
I could see him showing it to them and be like, what the hell is this?
But the theory I've seen floated is that they're like, Attack on Titan's kind of a supernatural, city setting, a little bit darker, and so it seems like they're green lighting every single one of those that comes across now. Like, kind of a kicking themselves sort of thing. That's just theory, but
I could see that.
With two of these starting right next to each other.
It's also possible they see that as a gravy train and want to hop on.
Yeah, that's the other way to look at it.
But yeah, I'm going to guess that iShoujo is not going to stick around. And then from what I've seen, the other one, which starts this week, is Tokyo Wonder Boys. Apparently that's going to be a professional soccer thing as opposed to a high school or something like that. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I really want another iShield 21 to come along. I guess Kuroko no Basket might be that, but I haven't read it yet.
iShield, that was a very good ensemble manga.
Yeah, like, the football was beside the point.
But it was they presented the football as something, like, even if you weren't really into football, which I wasn't.
No, me either.
They made it tense and interesting.
You know what's funny is, because of that manga, now I can sit in bars when there's a football game on and actually kind of enjoy it, because I know what's going on.
And not be, like, the guy, like, nursing a martini quietly to yourself.
I can just be like, oh, they're, one down away from... they're 5 yards away. If they get this, they get a new down. I know that from manga.
You should not mention that last part.
Just all tell them, why don't you do... Why isn't that guy doing, like, the devil bat spin? Ugh, amateurs. Okay,
all right.
So with the latest round of cancellation, there is very little keeping Bleach from the bottom. So we're talking about that first.
So who guessed that Fear Guy wasn't dead?
I think Greg did, and I told him that would be stupid if he wasn't dead.
at least like we get a shot of Rugia's Bankai form, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. But and I like it has a little bit of a flashback thing to when he was saved by Juha Bakht back in the day.
Yeah, he was going to die from some sort of terminal disease.
And he was scared of what would happen after he died.
Yeah. And then it was just, yo, dog, I can give you power.
All you got to do is die for me later.
Yeah, which he does. He has no brain, so he kind of dies.
And then
we see Rukia's new Bankai.
Which is like a snow princess thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, except, you know, she's, I guess, completely turned to ice and can't really move while it's released.
Yeah, she cracks her hand because she twitches it a little.
Yeah.
And then Byakuya...
And then they have a nice adopted brother-sister moment.
Yeah. He tells her to let it warm down gradually because he's an expert on her Bankai. That she has just used for the first time.
Well, he's an expert on death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knows how not to die.
He's like, okay, go lean up against that wall and stand there for like 3 hours. You'll be fine.
If you fake your death, no one will attack you for the rest of the battle.
Grab someone else's corpse and cover yourself with it.
So then we get the title card, and it cuts to, what was her name?
Kotetsu? It's Asane.
Kotetsu sounds
right. It's Asane's sister.
Yes. And then
Unohana's vice captain.
Kotetsu. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, and, that's a minor character for me to remember her name.
And Yoroichi have, like, they found each other and have decided to...
They've like, Yoro, started a field hospital, basically.
Yoroichi? Don't you mean Rachiru, isn't it?
Yachiru, that was it.
Yeah.
It was a Y name.
Yeah.
So
and Kenpachi's sword find one another. No.
So Kotetsu sends Yachiru to go get, like,
bed
supplies and blankets. And she just sees it as a whole big game.
Yeah. She says now that Ken's never coming back, her schedule is wide open.
Which, does that mean she assumes that, like, Unohana killed him, or...?
I'm guessing so?
Kotetsu, like, looks pretty sad.
Yeah, or, you know, he's off on some quest to kill Juha Bakht. I don't know.
Okay, it's not Isane's sister. Her name is Isane Kotetsu.
Okay.
She's Kiyone's sister.
Okay, yeah. And Unohana's vice captain.
Isane's
and sister. Then the silence appears.
Yes. Freaky old man.
Was it an old man or an old woman or what?
Old something.
An old Quincy. Suddenly appears behind Isane and, like, hugs her. Saying,
and basically, she seems to be able to move time and space.
Yeah.
Well, it's do either of you guys watch Doctor Who or not?
No.
Okay, this is the exact same sort of ability that these creatures called the Silence have, which is, as soon as you are no longer looking at them, they are erased from your memory.
Oh, I've actually seen that episode. That's like the one I've seen. The aliens, right?
Yeah, well, the aliens. That really narrows it down for Doctor Who.
The one with the aliens that when you look at them, they erase your memory.
Yes, basically. You know, so while you're still looking at them, you can, like, so it's not quite the same. Because in that case, while you're still looking at them, you're aware of them. But then as soon as you're not seeing them, all presence, all memory of anything going on with them is erased.
So, like, Yachiru punches him. I guess she does say him afterwards. And then as soon as she glances away, he's gone. And she says, huh, I swear I just punched somebody. Who was I trying to punch anyway? And then
that's a really good punch, by the way. Like that panel where she just flies in and punches him in the face.
I love her expression.
And then she gets, you know, punched back in the face by something, but she has no idea what it is.
And the mysterious voice introduces himself as V, Vanishing Point Gwen Hale.
His very existence vanishes right before your eyes.
Like he had this introduction planned.
So this is a really cool power.
Yeah, yes. No, it's an ability that I enjoy.
I like this, like, hopefully this is an actual fight that they focus on, because it's two people who are not, like, immensely powerful versus someone with a neat gimmick.
Well,
this is going to be the excuse for Kenpachi to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be the, you know, I use two hands so I can cut through time and space and kill you.
Except his eye patch will be off and so he can see everything everywhere.
Yeah.
Or it'll be, like, because he has his eye patch on, that eye doesn't forget or something like that. It'll be some... No, he'll start with it off, and then he'll put the eye patch back on, and then that'll be what allows him to see it, or something like that.
You guys are putting way
too much. I like it as it is. Like, just Yachiru and Kotetsu.
You know what would be really funny is if there was no gimmick and Kenpachi was just so strong that every time this guy tried to attack, he fought him off. He's like, huh, who was I fighting? Peekaboo. Slash. Huh. There was something going on here.
And that just continues for the rest of the arc.
Yeah. Until this guy just like succumbs to his wounds from trying to attack Kenpachi.
I think it would be disappointing if they build Kenpachi up this much and he just back to like kill
a job
one. Yeah, this old guy.
No, he's going to end up fighting Juha Bakht and being taken down.
This wasn't a super terrible chapter, but it was one of those ones that
It was transitional.
I read like 90 seconds. Like, it just went by real fast.
Well, I mean, once I saw that Rukia fight wasn't over, I just started skipping down.
It's just like, when it started with the flashback, I was like, who's that? Oh, no.
For like a half second, I was like, is that Unohana? Is she still alive? And nope, it was Fear Guy. Oh, well.
Poor Fear Guy. You had a kind of a cool design and a crappy fight.
Yep.
You won't be missed.
So, done with Bleach?
Yeah, I mean, are we in agreement that Kenpachi is totally going to show up?
Yeah, what? I think so. That's what I was expecting when I was
saying I hope not.
I know you're hoping not, but...
I think he will.
Does your brain tell you? Okay.
So, Nisekoi. Sagumi finds another weird thing in the mansion.
I suppose one thing we can mention real quick. Nisekoi apparently has confirmed that this season is going to go for 20 episodes.
Oh.
Which is kind of an odd number.
I didn't know they had seasons.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
Usually
the idea is 13 and then 26, and so then that's why you have openings and endings typically change. Yeah, on those sort of increments.
So it's really bothering me that every Sagumi chapter is exactly the same. Like,
yeah,
kind of lampshaded a little bit in this chapter.
But the lampshading doesn't like forgive it. It just makes it obvious that they know too.
I mean, it's just like Sagumi walks into the foyer. There's something weird sitting on a cart.
How many times has this happened?
Yeah.
And they actually like outline how many times it's happened.
So they find gummies, and this time it's Paula that steals them, not Sagumi.
Yes. But Sagumi still ends up at the center of it.
Yes, like Sagumi tries to prevent her because all of those crazy things have happened in the past.
Yeah, so the gummies make you fall in love with the first person you see. And then this chapter gets really lesbian-y.
Yep.
Paula eats it and falls for Sagumi.
And then Chitoge eats it and falls for Sagumi.
And then Tachibana eats it and falls for Sagumi.
And then Onodera eats it and falls for Sagumi.
And Onodera puts the moves on her.
Oh, she is fast. Like, that's like the secret best part of this chapter is apparently she is just like super aggressive.
Like, she's nice about it is the thing. Like, yeah. The other ones are being incredibly overt about like, you know, throwing themselves at her and whatnot. And she's like, oh, you know, we should study together, and then, you know...
She literally goes for the crotch.
They think it doesn't have an effect at first, and then it's just, like, you know, rubbing the inner thigh.
See, I thought the joke was going to be that even if Onodera loves someone, she doesn't actually show it.
She just, like, ruins her life for them.
Yeah, I thought that would have been a much better joke.
And then the center of the universe shows up.
Yeah. Raku, who finds Gummy and then doesn't eat it.
But Sagumi,
he's a nice guy, because Chikoge tackles her and then she goes super saiyan.
Yeah, runs away.
Because she really wants to bang Raku right now.
Yeah,
she wants to bang Bishonen Raku.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Her like inner image of him,
which looks a lot like Axel from League of Rare.
Kind of doesn't have the cool cheek thing though.
So she runs off and she crashes at the end of a wall into some boxes.
And
some degree of time has passed, but we'll say over 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, Raku takes her to the nurse's office.
And, like, lays her down on the bed. And she's so overcome with this love potion that she doesn't even have control of herself anymore. And she grabs Raku.
Yeah. Yeah. A hug.
And then her phone falls out of her pocket and the message from Claude plays.
And, man, who could have seen this coming?
It turns out that the love potion doesn't last that long. Only 10 minutes.
Yep.
It's impossible to be effective than that.
Everybody seems to have like, oh wait, no, they actually do remember. They were just like, kind of, what the heck was going on?
Like, let's just never talk about
it. Paula seems particularly disturbed by what just happened.
Yeah. Well, you know, she was asking Sagumi to, you know, pet her and whatnot. Like, hers was a little weird.
He's a sub.
And Eldredera is like a sexual predator.
Yeah, that's almost worrying what just happened there.
It just goes to show she doesn't really care for Raku that much because she has not gone for his crotch.
And I can't wait for the time that Tsugumi finds a, I don't know, pizza sitting on a cart that, let's say, I don't know, makes everyone into a boy to something, whatever.
Gender swaps the entire school.
Yeah. I'm gesturing with my hand so hard.
Are you saying that this was a little contrived?
I don't mind that it's contrived. I wish they just do something else with Tsugumi.
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird that every one of her stories is just exactly the same story over and over again.
Like, does he just not want Tsugumi in the manga anymore?
Is that shtick at this point?
I think she's just an excuse for him to have random absurd chapters. Because at this point, he knows that this is the next Love Hina, so you gotta drag it out somehow.
It just feels really uncreative, like, when it's just the... You swap out the thing she finds, and that's it. That's the only difference.
I think now would be like a great time to get Tsugumi some character development.
I like Tsugumi.
Yeah.
She's awesome. But
like, why not? You just did a whole thing with Haru for 15 chapters.
She's like a super strong assassin that, like, there's a lot to her character, and all they use her for is, oh,
comic
she finds
relief.
Wacky glasses to let her x-ray vision people or something.
She's torn between her loyalty to her job and... that she really likes this guy. And I think that's probably more depth than pretty much any of those other girls have right now.
Yeah, at least she's struggling about it. Everyone else just seems totally fine being adulterers.
Yeah.
Well, most of the other girls are aware that, no, they're not actually in a relationship, so...
Not Tajibana. She's kind of a shitheel.
Well, okay, yeah.
And Onodera for a while.
It wasn't that long.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I don't have much to say on this chapter because we've already talked about this chapter at least 3 times.
So the handcuffs were interesting.
Yeah. Those little fluffy things that made her super weak were... That was really funny this chapter. That was this chapter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Okay.
Totally the same thing.
All right. So should we move on?
All right. So now we're going to talk about Shokugeki no Soma, which I've gotten the most tweets about this one.
I'm in the stage of grief with Beelzebub that I'm kind of bitter, and I think I'm taking it out on Shokugeki no Soma.
I will say that I didn't get through the whole manga today. I got halfway through, so we're only going to talk about the first half. Because
I read the back half, so I'll be...
Well, I think it'd be overwhelming to cover the whole manga in one episode anyway.
Yeah, I've read the whole thing, but it's been a long time since I've read the first half. So
yeah, I started it a long time ago, but I eventually dropped it, and I read scattered chapters here and there.
So maybe it's just my grief about Beelzebub talking, but I feel like this has a lot of the same heart.
It's a little subversive from time to time.
Like, also, it's porn. Like,
yeah.
Let's just get that straight up out of the way. It's clearly just porn.
You got to the first step. The porn gets dialed way back.
Yeah, it does. It like, even beyond the stuff that you've been seeing, like where you're at, Imran, it really gets dialed down.
Like, the first couple of chapters were straight up porn.
So, how many...
girl in her bra getting tentacle raped by a octopus.
Yes. So, how many odd looks did you get while you were reading this in public, Imran?
I was mostly towards the back of the room, and I tried to angle my chair so nobody could see it. Yeah, I was out, so I had to read it in public.
No, that's a bad idea. You shouldn't do that.
It was mostly fine.
So anyway.
It's like, what are you reading? Oh, a comic about food. Click. She really likes the food.
So anyway, porn aside, the artwork in this is fantastic.
Yeah. Also by a porn creator.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to share names, but yeah, this guy's done porn.
Lots of porn.
Yep.
But and yeah, the art and the characters are great, I think.
Yeah, the design is good.
I love the character designs of everybody.
Everyone pretty much passes the silhouette test.
Yeah, like, everybody looks unique. I don't remember a vast majority of the names, but and one other thing that I'll say this, and this is something that especially even past where you've gotten, Imran, it spreads out even further. Lots of ethnicity in the cast. It is very varied, which is not something you often see.
And not always racist. Like, Italian people don't hate Japanese people for no reason.
Yeah, where I was reading, there was Indonesian, Chinese, Italian,
Indian, yeah. I mean, that. they cover pretty much everything, which is good, because if you're going to be pulling in, you know, a bunch of different cultures for your food stuff, having people from those cultures is usually a plus.
So the gist of this manga is there's a guy who grew up with a professional chef father, and his is like a mercenary that was retired from the battlefield. He has his own little tiny shop in Japan that serves like a different meal every day. And the teenager grew up learning how to cook from his father, who turns out is actually like a world famous chef. Yeah, and he sends him off to like a world famous chef school.
Yeah, so I mean, you find out it's the same school that he had gone to when he was a kid.
Tōtsuki.
Yeah.
Tōtsuki, I guess.
Tōtsuki, yeah.
So, and the main idea behind it is, you know, if you really, you know, Soma always wants to be a better cook than his father. That is kind of the main goal, is he wants to be a better cook than his father. And his father basically says, well, if you want to do that, you're going to have to go here. So, you know, he packs up, he closes up the shop and goes and enrolls in the school.
And he runs afoul of basically all the rich kids and amazing chefs that are already there.
There's already, like, the elite class at the school.
So this is basically a climbing to the top of a high school ladder manga, but about cooking.
Yeah, and cooking being portrayed as battles.
Right. Or shokugekis.
But, like, literally, there are
like
cooking
Iron Chef
battles.
Yes. Like, you can hear the Iron Chef music during the judge segment in your head.
Yeah, I'm just expecting the, like, oh, how did those stories always start? The chairman stories. I can't remember now, but you know what I mean.
Like, I vaguely remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's
on
been
Iron
a
Chef,
really
they'd always
long
start,
time.
Like, they'd always start with a story about the ingredient and, like, some absurd tale about how he met somebody that told him something. That was a part I enjoyed. So, Shokugeki no Soma.
Yeah. So, like I said, I feel like this manga has a lot of heart. Like, it's funny and well drawn, and
I think,
like, I actually root for the characters more often than not.
Yeah, I think that the flaw that this had most in the beginning was that Soma was kind of, I don't know, invulnerable.
An unstoppable juggernaut.
Yeah, it was way too easy. And in the more recent stuff, A, because they've gone, as opposed to the complete head-to-head stuff, but there's also some other ways that they have, I don't know, changed how the judging is done and that sort of stuff, which, you know, puts him back on his heels. And he doesn't always necessarily, you know, win outright or something like that, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. I like that they made it clear that he probably could have beaten that French alumni or alumnus if he himself were doing the cooking. But since he had to just, you know, he was not there to win everybody's battles for them, it ended up that his team actually lost. And, like, that actually tore him up, because, like, he's so unused to losing. I think it's, they handle that fairly well. Like, it was starting to get a little bit boring that he was so obviously more talented than everybody else. But the last two arcs, like, the last two competitions, he's been either messing up and, like, pulling it together at the very end, or, you know, not doing well, period.
In recent chapters, he's also, you know, had some rival losses.
Yeah, and then, like, I guess we'll be spoiling. Do you mind a little bit of spoilers, Imran?
Go for it.
His dad visits the school, and so they have their own shokugeki where he competes against his father. So
I'm guessing he loses terribly.
Not terribly, but he loses.
Yeah. But I mean, like, more than just, like, Soma's a good character. He reminds me a bit of Oga. Again, that maybe feels above grief.
He is cocky, but he has, like, a basis for that cockiness.
But I, like, overall, I think this is a very good ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
now,
like you said, great designs, great personalities that mesh well.
That cast has kind of exploded in the past, like 10 chapters. Like, holy crap.
Yeah. The one I was reading, the latest tournament, there's what, like, about 20 characters, and most of those seem like established characters. And then, even then, like, there's people sitting in the stands that are established characters.
And not even all of them are established characters. Like, some of the ones, like, they've been shown in the background or something like that, but this is the first time that they're on a main stage, and if you're counting that, it's basically, like, doubling the size of the cast right there.
And there's a couple of characters that, like, look similar, and I just found out, like, the reason for that, for two of them at least, were because they're sisters, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And so it was kind of difficult to tell the difference between those two for a little while. But, like, overall, I can't remember any names at all. Like, even, not even the, like, Soma's name I remember, but I think his last name was, like, Yura Kita?
And then there's Tadakoro, the girl.
Yeah. But beyond that, it's like, no, nothing.
I remember Ikumi, but, you know.
It's equal opportunity porn. And
we've talked about it before, yeah.
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 In what fact, are my main problems during still the middle stands? During the middle section, it's probably much more eye candy for the girls than for the guys.
Oh yeah, lots of man ass, as we've mentioned in the past.
Yeah.
One of my problems from back then still kind of stands is the food doesn't look super great.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's too Japanese, I think, for us to grasp.
Well, not necessarily that. It looks like it's almost too detailed. Like, it's very obvious they took a picture of it, and he's drawing that picture, and it just doesn't fit the style.
I noticed in the tournament that I read that, like, people would have their dish, and then it was just, like, the same picture from every angle. Like, just shrunk and scaled and twisted and...
Yeah.
But still just, like, the one picture of the food.
But, I can understand, like, that's probably really time-consuming.
Yeah, difficult, like... On a week-to-week basis, drawing delicious-looking food must just be really hard.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what's amusing is one of the things that they do is the pack-ins, I think, for the volumes, but then also, like, I think we had mentioned on the voting thing where people voted on what their favorite dishes were and whatnot, but there's pack-in things where they actually put in recipes with the manga.
Yeah, because there's an actual, like, food artisan working on this, right?
Yes, that there. So this is actually a three-person thing. Although I imagine they're more a contact than directly involved, I think. But so this is another one where it's drawn by one person, written by another person, and then they have a food consultant, who is a third person. So this is basically being done by three people.
I will say that it's not as good as Assassination Classroom in this respect, but the paneling and the position of stuff is actually pretty good. Like there was one panel I remember in particular where they were showing off the French chef's medal that he won, and like it's a three-prong medal, and at like the end of each prong was a dialogue bubble, and like it's not obvious unless you're like looking for that kind of flow, but it looks really good like in without you even noticing.
Yeah, flows like, well and reads well.
Yeah, so they know what they're doing. So Shokugeki no Soma's probably we'll cover the next 30 chapters next week.
We'll try to get like too recent, you know, give people a chance to catch up on their own and get too recent, and then probably the week after next we'll start just covering it in earnest week to week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then that's assuming that it actually comes out week to week, because the one unfortunate thing is the source for the English translation for this is not terribly consistent, and I'm saying that like much less consistent than say Assassination Classroom, and you know how often we have none for some week and then two the next week or something like that. So
we'll see. Yeah,
it'd be
out.
Great if this showed up on off Assassination Classroom weeks and vice versa.
That would work convenient. Out really well. Yeah,
this podcast is too damn long. Speaking of which, two Assassination Classrooms.
Oh god damn it! Okay, so, let's fly through these.
Well, we got to hit the cover image of chapter 78 first.
Slime King. Demon King.
Koro-sensei.
Yeah.
Who is saying, if you give up on killing me, I'll give you 10 billion G gold.
And the answer and the is, options... you don't even have any money.
Well, it's a dialogue box. Yes, no, or you don't even have any money.
So, Imran, you've been playing it. Do those costumes strike you as kind of bravely defaulty? Or is that just because I was playing it at the time that
I think they're bravely defaults are just generic enough to match with this. I would say it's just, it's generic Black Mage, generic Thief, generic Black Knight.
Yeah.
You see, and here I was going to wonder whether this was supposed to be any specific, because, I mean, obviously he's a slime from Dragon Warrior, so I was wondering whether that was a costume and whether Nagisa was wearing a female's costume.
Come to think of it, it wouldn't be Bravely Default because that game's like 3 years old in Japan, so there'd be no reason to be referencing it right now.
But yeah, that was... So when we left it last week... Or week before last, Takabayasha had left Class E.
Yeah.
And they were all basically following him.
Yeah.
Well, they were planning to follow him. And Koro-sensei, this might be super racist, I'm not sure.
I struggled with this too, just looking at this panel going, he's got the hair on there that makes it look...
Yeah.
I'm not...
What he says, like, I went to Africa to become extremely black and...
Like, to get tan. He got a tan.
He turned
you would go to Africa. It is very sunny there. But
There's other places you could go to.
This is uncomfortable. Let's just. He went somewhere and got tanned, and now he's back in black. He's back in black.
Guitar riff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Insert
and
guitar riff.
His plan was to become super black, to become a ninja and not be noticed by anyone.
Despite standing out ridiculously when dressed up as a ninja.
Yeah, except now he's a monolith from 2001.
So they start a plan to do, what do they call it? Like the post something something.
Post exit interview? But
I don't know. The aftercare, that's what it is.
Yeah. They just want to watch Takabayashi to make sure he's like going okay outside of Class E.
Well, and specifically Koro-sensei wants to fix his problems that he never got a chance to fix.
Yeah.
So anyway, cut to Class A.
Yeah, and he is getting warned by the other students, like, oh, you're from Class E, be prepared, this is rough, you know, you're going to have a hard time keeping up with this class.
And so, you know, he's looking at the teacher, and you're seeing that he's, you know, sweating and not putting his pen down, and everybody else and other students in the class are going, oh, man, he's already in a daze. And Takabayashi's like, we covered this last semester.
And then he points out that the teacher's doing a really poor job explaining everything. And, like,
yeah,
he's doing a poor job, and then he's not leaving it up on the board very long so that people...
I've had professors like this that, like, they'll just talk and write and erase and talk.
Yeah, I've gotten in the habit of class of taking pictures of whiteboards.
I just took a dictaphone with me.
Yeah. So.
So he's remembering how Koro-sensei used to teach him. And Koro-sensei, like, he borrowed one of Takabayashi's DVDs of... I'm not going to show the Japanese version, but regarding the incident of how there's no doubt that my little sister became a Hiroshima fan due to her boyfriend's influence, which I believe is like 7 different anime?
Yeah. That's basically a romance cast in one title.
And Koro-sensei enjoyed it and was amazed by how they got all the moe tropes in there.
I love the blood shooting out of Takabayashi's ears.
And Koro-sensei, to help Takabayashi study, took the second season opener and made a parody version of it with the equation he's been having trouble with.
Yeah, and then that's where the blood shoots out of the ears.
Yes. Koro-sensei's weakness, tone deafness.
The picture of him singing is so great.
But yeah.
So, you know, after class is done, he asks people if they want to, you know, grab tea or something like that. And the other guys are like, oh, no, we have to head to cram school. Sorry. And so, you know, the only people who aren't are the ones who, you know, are the prodigies who were, you know, the top of the class. So they can relax. But everybody else is, you know, constantly, you know, having to run around studying, trying to keep up.
But, like, what the thing that caught me was that they're actually kind of nice to Takabayashi. Like, yeah,
he's
normal school children. Which, every time we've seen them when they're interacting with Class E, and they are monsters to Class E, but they're not monsters to each other.
I guess that's the lightning rod idea that the chairman's doing. He's keeping the school perfect by just, like, giving them something to focus all their hate on.
So this back part was
it's a flashback. He's thinking about his time in Class E when he went to a maid cafe with Terasaka.
Because Koro-sensei referenced this part before.
Yeah.
When he made fun of Terasaka for going to a maid cafe and then genuinely enjoying it.
Yeah.
And he's in the background, like, with cat ears and a maid costume, taking notes.
But still with tentacles.
Yes. And Takabayashi notices him.
And then he also notices something outside of his window in present day.
Which were most of Class E standing outside with camo hats.
But very bad camo hats.
Yes. And also Koro-sensei being plainly obvious because he's glossy and black.
So, you know, he's wondering, why the heck is everybody, you know, caring about me so much and that sort of stuff?
And he thinks about how he was an outcast in Class E because he wasn't good at assassinations.
Meanwhile, Class E thinks, well, he must be doing great because, like, he looks so happy and he looks healthier. And they're like, he's fine now. So Takabayashi goes into a meeting with the chairman and his son.
Yes.
And he's simply told, hey, don't touch anything in here. The last guy who did was killed. Or, well, sent to Class E, but, you know, same thing.
Yeah. 1,050 years in Class E.
So, you know, they say, you know, we'd like you to present another speech before the school, and hands him an already written speech.
Yeah.
About how Class E is scum.
Yes.
And the chairman touches Takabayashi weirdly inappropriately for more centipede imagery.
Yeah, that we've gotten before.
But still, it's like I get the head hand, the chest hand is a little weird.
Yeah. It's just trying to make him that much creepier.
All right, so next chapter, Takabayashi is trying to figure out, like, he starts reading the speech.
Yeah.
He's talking how depraved they are.
Like,
and
they
first
have
of all,
orgies, you know.
Go Meihara.
He's got Ryo, he's got Megu.
Kanzaki.
Yeah. The
They're
other
terribly violent.
He made out great in this fake script.
Love the, like, Road Warrior Terasaka.
Yeah.
What's her name?
I forgot her name, but she was the chubby one.
Yeah. Oh.
He calls them obese with no reason but to live besides eating.
See the pervert students in bras with cameras heading into the women's bath?
I mean, with the exception of the women's underwear,
that's
not inaccurate.
Yeah.
Then it shows
the students burdened by appalling communication issues. Nagisa, don't you think it's about time you attended school? Shut up, hag.
And the girl who loved bugs is dripping the wings of a butterfly.
Creepy sniper guy just setting things on fire and smiling. This is a great image of Classy.
And so, you know, he's like saying, even if slightly, I want to help them. So I have a request to everybody. In order for me to monitor and you know, help them, please give me your approval to start a Class E re-education committee.
So basically he has to tear down Class E emotionally to get in his position where he'll be set for life. And his parents will love him because...
You know, this is showing initiative.
Yeah. He is going to be a ruler of people at school.
Yeah, the management committee chairman. So he'll be part of the student government.
And so he folds it up. It's like, yeah, okay.
He's like, I'll do it. And then he, you know, says, this is the view you've always had from on top, isn't it?
And well, he's saying that to the chairman's son.
Yeah. Asano. And then
Asano's pissed to get the question because he has no power.
Yeah.
He has this perception of being on top, but he's basically at the same level that Takabayashi is.
So it's pissing him off that his father gave this, like, classy subjugation plan to him.
So on his walk home, a mysterious black figure is following him.
Well, not following him, like, just sort of peeking out in front of him.
Yeah. Stalking in front of him.
And he says he's going to call the police on Kuro-sensei.
How could you see me under the cover of darkness when there is this bright light behind me?
And Kuro-sensei gives him an illegal rare makeup.
Yeah. He like, Bishonen's talking about.
Yeah, Visual K.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. And then he puts him back to normal really quickly.
Yeah. I tried killing your unique otaku character.
And he's saying, like, what Takabayashi is doing to himself is basically the same thing. He's killing himself by trying to be someone he's not.
Yeah, he has so much strength inside of him.
And, you know, even if you're not quite doing it now, if you keep doing this at some point in the future, you will kill that inner you. So, you know, if you need somebody to talk to, I'm here.
So Takabayashi gets up there and...
Class E is noticing his apprehension at his new speech.
He has some sort of bloodlust in him.
Yeah. Something they haven't felt from him before.
So he starts giving the speech, but then flips it around. He literally flips the script.
Yeah.
And talks about how Class E is not weak, that they're the ones who face discrimination. And it's as comfortable as a maid cafe.
And he was lying. He lied because he wanted to be accepted. He wanted to be considered as strong.
And then...
Meanwhile, Kuro-sensei is at the top of the gym, like, completely black still.
Smiling.
Yeah.
The chairman tries to shut down the speech by getting people to go pull him off the stage.
But and he says he wants to go back to Class E, and the chairman's son runs in, and it's like, well, you have to stop this now.
Starts whisper yelling at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Takabayashi pulls out a plaque that he swiped from the chairman's room.
Which is Asano's, like, award, his commendation.
Yeah. Best Educational Manager Award.
And he takes out the, is that a Kuro-sensei knife or just like a...
I'm assuming it's a Kuro-sensei knife.
It looks like it's just a wood knife. It doesn't have
Yeah, it looks like it's wood, but it has like a metal thing on one side. That they've shown them before.
Maybe it is in any case, he uses it to smash Asano's award.
Right on stage.
In front of everybody.
Which means he's going to get sent back to Class A.
Yes.
In the past, another student who did this same thing or something like that, thinking rationally based on precedent, I'd say it's off to Class E for me as well.
Yes.
And then he mocks the chairman and his son, saying they look like people who have been scared, or who are just scared.
Yeah, because Asano says, you know, standing up to strong people is like, oh, you're strong? You seem more like the people that are scared and running around.
The best sight gag, of course, that they stuck up in the gym and people have noticed him already, so we can't move.
They think it's a basketball stuck in the rafters. Let's throw stuff at it.
Get it loose.
So Kurosuma introduces the new thing for semester two.
were you going to say season two?
Yes.
Explosives.
Yes.
And because explosives can hurt a whole bunch of people, they only want people who are, like, trained and tested to use them. And yeah, nobody wants to do all the studying for it.
Yeah. You need someone that's really good at studying. A total nerd. No life.
So Takabayashi takes it, saying it'll be easy if he turns it to a parody of the second season's OP. And Karasuma was just thinking, okay, nerd.
Yeah. Loser. But yeah.
What did you say, Poindexter?
That was a nice little arc to start off the second semester.
Yeah. Yeah.
And gave Takabayashi some personality and a place in the class.
It did status quo, but it didn't status quo unrealistically.
Well, it didn't necessarily status quo, because I'm hoping that next chapter, actually, it might... I'm hoping it'll involve the rest of the student body a little bit more to see how they reacted to what Takabayashi did.
Yeah, because he kind of declared war on the rest of the school.
And, you know... And Class E kind of, you know, beat Class A in their challenge at the end of the first semester, too. So the order is kind of usurped at the moment a little bit.
Telling the whole school, it's like, hey, our teacher's way better and Class A is kind of shitty. I'm going back to Class E is not good for the chairman's plan.
So I'm hoping they stick with this a little bit.
By the way, it was Hara. I didn't want to interrupt you guys. The name, right. The nubbin, oh. The chubby girl.
Yeah. Well,
those were good.
Yes.
Good arc.
So, on to Naruto, lucky number 666.
Yep. The most satanic Naruto yet.
Yeah. That's all.
This time, guest featuring his younger brother.
I heard this issue was printed with Kiss's blood mixed in with the ink.
Kiss the band?
Yeah. Oh, you've never heard of this? They had a comic book that the rumor was that, like, their blood was mixed in with the ink that was used to print it.
To print every copy.
Yeah, like, a little bit of blood, not like, you know, it wasn't like 40% blood or anything.
That's when, you know, satanic people went into homeopathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloodletting.
I mean, they're satanic. They're not, you know, monsters. So Kakashi is like, super glad that Obito seems to be back to some sort of realm of sanity.
Oh, good. Yeah. Someone's doing something.
We tried.
It's about time.
I got an arm kicked at me.
Here, let me try once. Didn't work. Shit. I guess I'll just stand here.
Oh, Naruto's dead. We gave it our all.
So Obito is using his, you know, his eyes' power to phase parts of himself into the other dimension.
Yeah. To avoid being attacked by Madara.
Which is still rather, you know, effective, especially given Madara does not have that ability. So, you know, when there are abilities he doesn't have, it's a plus.
Yeah. And he's using this power to reach into Madara and take out Tailed Beast.
Or
yeah,
he's trying to, anyway.
He only manages to get a little bit of the first and the eighth, but it's a start.
But he still has the nine tails with him.
Yeah.
So he's got that going for him at least. So he tells Kakashi to go ahead and take Naruto to the time-space dimension.
Yeah, and also, isn't it convenient that the two he was able to manage to grab a piece of are the two that we have, you know, other protagonists who are, are affiliated with those ones?
Well, no. Okay, I was going to save this till the end, but the two he grabbed are the only two that Naruto does not have a piece of, because he got the other ones while he was fighting that are what are they called? The zombie versions.
Jinchuriki? Well, okay, isn't it convenient that happened then? How about, although I guess Obito would be aware of that, so.
So, when he puts these in Naruto, Naruto's going to have a little bit of every tailed beast, thus making him a sage of six paths.
I like how Kurama's just like hanging out in there. Yeah, I'm just fully formed. I'm like you goobers. So Kakashi like Kamui's Naruto into the time-space dimension.
And Obito tries to do that himself, but is unable to because Madara is attacking him.
Madara decided not to just stand around while people did things.
It's like, but I'm talking! God, you're not playing fair!
I stood there for the whole Yura Madara speech and did nothing.
And, you know, Sakura's just kind of going like, what the hell is this place?
She's like, dodged a bullet. She doesn't care where she is, but she's away from Madara.
She's yeah, like... Oh, Madara's... I'm going to be trapped here for the rest of my life if nobody comes and saves me. Oh, well.
Yeah.
How did Kakashi get out? Just Kamui power?
Probably, like, I don't know, looked in a mirror and did it. Who knows? So, Obito and Kakashi decide to team up to try to hold off Madara long enough so that Obito can peace out and go help Naruto. And the fourth realizes they haven't done this since they were children.
Yes. Because parallels.
Oh, and we skipped over the thing I said I was going to mention. On one of the earlier pages, they messed up and Madara has Obito's staff.
It means nothing because, you know, later in that page, Obito has Obito's staff. So he just threw the one.
Yeah, it just amused me that that was something. I don't know why that stood out to me, but yeah.
I didn't notice it until you pointed it out.
Kakashi is yelling at Obito when they were kids for being late all the time.
Yeah.
Which is a
trait that he picks up later in life.
Yeah. Cut. And Rin says, like, well, it doesn't matter because something. And then it flashes back to...
Then Guy shows up for some reason.
Yeah. Well, he shows up to challenge Kakashi. Because they've had hundreds of fights.
Because that's what Guy does.
So while Madara is trying to attack Obito, because he doesn't know which one is going to use the Kamui.
Well, he attacks them both.
He's working out in his head, like, the possibilities of how things are going to go down in a really, like, cool woodblock-style print.
Yeah.
Like, I find it funny that the super old guy thinks in, like, super old drawings.
So, he attacks them both, but Minato, like, tackles him.
Yeah, wild
armlessly. Don't worry about him, he's armless. And Obito and Kakashi.
When did you think of that one, and how long were you sitting on?
Cameron, okay. Can you hear the air from me shaking my head?
That break we took was just so I could think of that joke.
You and your team of writers, you just like, okay, it's almost time. What do you got for me? Like, God damn it! What am I paying you guys for? Armless? Okay, perfect. Gold. We're going with that.
So Kakashi and Obito both use a Kamui, and apparently it like stacks.
Yeah, so, like, it's faster when both of them are doing it.
It's a level 2 Kamui.
Yeah.
So I'm still not entirely sure what the fourth did here.
He just, like, Luigi rocketed him.
I guess.
It does look like he just falls down. Like, there's
yeah,
not
no,
really...
Why did he have the kunai in his mouth? That's something
I'm assuming it's so he can do like a flash step, like you know, like one of the jump things. But I don't see him actually doing anything.
Oh, you know what I wonder if it is if he goes to move and like now he's powerless and he has to just rely on his students. If that's what it's all supposed to be about, that they've surpassed him or something.
I guess, but because it doesn't seem like he actually does anything.
No, he falls down. He's an enfeebled old man at this point.
Yeah, he is an armless old man.
So Obito makes it to Naruto, and
Sakura asks the good question of, how do I know you're not super evil still?
And he says, I'm not, and she just sort of takes it.
Like, well, let's be honest here. You know, he's dead at this point. What is there to lose?
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying she's stupid.
Dead man walking.
So and Obito, goes to
Naruto inappropriately.
I mean, everyone's touched Naruto there. At some point.
I do like how, you know, Sakura's hand is still inside of his chest.
He has to keep his hand beating.
It's going to be great when he wakes up and it's like, I'm good. Oh my god, what are you doing?
Exactly. But I mean, like, she's been doing that, but she has not still been giving him, you know, mouth to mouth. So she's just, you know, pumping unoxygenated blood or whatever.
He's fine.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
he's only been legally dead for like 20 minutes. He'll be okay.
So it goes back, and apparently something happened.
A guy jumped down.
Yeah, I know guy jumped down, but like everyone's acting like he did something.
Well, no, because Kakashi had turned and was looking at Obito to stack the teleportation thing, assuming he was going to get hit by Madara's blast. Guy stopped Madara's attack from hitting Kakashi somehow.
Okay, because yeah. I didn't miss the part. I missed the part where Guy apparently stopped the attack.
Well, we don't see the part where he stopped the attack, but we do see the panel right. Well, like when
the anime thing
Obito
the
is.
The smoke clears and Guy is standing there protecting Kakashi.
Yeah, but like in the panel where Obito is going into the other dimension thing, there you can see the ball about to hit Kakashi.
And Madara's like, wait a second, I know that guy. And Guy's like, who the hell is he?
When have Guy and Madara run into one another?
When he was fighting with Toby Madara. I think regular Madara showed up.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I do love the running joke of Guy just not having any idea who anybody is.
Well, to be fair, Madara does look like wildly different than before.
That's true.
Yeah, but still.
In this one instance.
I would have liked it if Madara didn't recognize Guy, but Guy recognized him.
It's Madara Uchiha.
Like, who are you? I know Kakashi.
And then Guy like lectures him about how rude it is not to remember someone that you've met before.
So we're going to see Guy open every gate here now, I'm assuming,
yeah.
Right?
Going to open all, I don't know, let's say 12 gates. I don't remember how many there were.
I thought it was
also,
9.
If he's there, then probably 10-10 and other person.
Yeah, I wonder if this is where they...
Lockley.
DQB Madara.
Yeah. I can see it. I assume the QB is the last thing they're going to pull out of him.
Yeah. Because, I mean, theoretically... Obito does not have the Nine Tails. What's-his-face? Zetsu still has it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what they just gave to Naruto.
They gave him something. I'm assuming that it's Obito. Like, the whole Zetsu thing's a little weird, because, you know, I guess Obito just fully controls it now. Like, during that entire fight with Madara, he just kind of had control. That was never really explained.
Oh, Zetsu's eye isn't open. I assume he's, like... subdued at this point.
And he was able to take over at least enough of the hand to use that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just incapacitated, but still.
Yeah, so I think that the assumption is the Nine Tails is also getting implanted.
Otherwise he would die. Because I think you need your tailed beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But we'll get the other half out of him, and we'll have super-powered, awesome Naruto pretty soon.
His hair will turn all gold, and...
Wait. Well, his eyes are turning blue. Yeah. Wait.
And then Sasuke will show up and beat him so he can become a Hokage.
Sasuke's just going to be in the other dimension and jump in.
Getting Bulma pregnant.
No, he'll do the same thing Zetsu did of just like getting in the way of the...
So he gets the Nine Tails?
Yeah.
You know you can buy every episode of Dragon Ball Z on PSN and Xbox Live right now?
How much is it, like $2 an episode?
Yeah, for the
like
cropped Blu-ray rips. I think it's supposed to be like $400 if you buy everything. I'm tempted to just buy the car episode.
Just have it forever.
Just yeah. That episode?
Why not?
Let's go drive cars, baller.
and then nobody speaks of it ever again.
I remember when they gave that episode away at Burger King.
They're giving away gold. That's the only episode you need.
You got like a VHS with like that episode on it. I think I still have that somewhere. I should go dig it out. I was in a Japanese store today looking at Dragon Ball Z soda, really tempted to buy one. I was like looking.
It would probably taste awful.
I'm sure it was garbage, but I was like holding
like,
the grape.
Super old too, right?
No, it's Dragon Ball Z Kai. They still make that stuff.
Okay,
they should just have a Vegeta branded one. It should just be V8.
But I was standing there. I was standing there doing the ketchup catsup thing with an Android 18 can and a Great Saiyaman can, trying to figure out which one I wanted to get.
Which one did you get?
A Barg's Root Beer.
Split the difference, huh?
You're the best Dragon Ball Z character.
Oh, Barkman, yeah.
That was the most random tangent that just came up out of nowhere.
So, all speaking right. of Naruto, Dragon Ball Z soda. Speaking of Dragon Ball Z soda, One Piece. If we're all done with Naruto.
Yes.
So, the big ship that Treble threw...
Well, Brook is skipping along, having drawn Laboon's face on some balloons.
The best ever.
Yeah.
I love the sad baboon. Like, the one sad one.
Well, of course. He's sad because Brooke's not there.
They'll reunite someday.
Yes. After they... Oh, wait, we haven't talked about that theory on this thing yet.
Theory?
I know I posted about it, and I know that Mike has read it, but I don't know if you did. There is kind of a grand unified theory that takes all of the hints and makes everything make sense. The only thing it doesn't explain is the devil fruits. So I'm fully expecting that to be the plan, at least, whether or not it actually happens. But we'll talk about this later.
So, okay. Done. This cryptic theory.
Well, no, I'm
going to say right now, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Oh, really? Okay. I read it a while ago. It's detailed enough that it's at the point where I almost kind of consider it spoilers, so I don't want to talk about it openly on the podcast for people who might not want to hear it. So.
But it's not spoilers if it doesn't, something that doesn't exist.
Okay. Hey, guys, duck.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's the duck ship that Treble threw through the tower is crashing down on them.
Yeah, like, destroying the tower. And then it just cuts to Treble, looking very pleased with himself.
Well, everyone else is freaking out, a cover of Superman number one.
He's just like
awesome, I might have just knocked out Sugar, you know?
He's just like, nailed it, like, fist pump.
And then Cheesecake picture of Robin, bending over to check on Usopp.
I love that it's, three panels, left cheek, right cheek, okay, the rest of Robin.
I did not notice that paneling, and there is absolutely no reason for those breaks to be there. Although, yep. I guess they do it on the one above it, too, so I guess, I don't know, it's supposed to designate time passing? I don't know.
I think it's just, a pan-over idea of, the camera's panning to the side.
So Robin, picks up Usopp. It's like, hey, the duck came through, and Leo and the rest have been captured.
Yep,
and
so,
they're
kind of
trapped in there with them.
So we should probably get the hell out of here.
So all the fairies are in gunk. They're basically on flypaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, they're still incredibly naive, and so Treble, being aware of these things, is like, oh, actually, one of them is my dear friend. What's his name again? Oh, you mean Usoland?
And then he's not my friend.
So I like how much Sugar hates Treble. The second she shows up, she just kicks him.
Yeah. I didn't even notice that. She just punts him.
And...
I like the interrogation because of Treble's unnecessary, haha, I fooled you, shithead, every time he tricks them. It's just wonderful.
And then it's revealed that his sticky stuff is flammable. I'm sure that this will not become important whatsoever.
No. Hey, where's Kinemon, I wonder? Eh, that probably doesn't matter.
Oh, I actually wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking that this is going to be a reversal where Usopp is going...
Shot.
Well, no, Usopp is going to end up fighting him, and Robin's going to be the one who ends up taking down Sugar or something like that, because we don't know if the toy ability works on clones.
True, but also we don't know where Kinemon is, and he has fire powers.
Yeah. True.
And he just threw a ship through a building.
Yeah, I don't know. I just liked the idea that Robin, with her clone thing, might be naturally immune to the whole can be turned into toys.
So, the whole place blows up because the big stack of goo gets set on fire by Treble.
Again, Treble nailed it. He's totally killing it with protecting Sugar.
And so it blows Leo out to near where Usopp and Robin are. And Usopp's like, well, we gotta get out of here, so come on. And Leo refuses to leave.
Because they need to complete Operation SOP.
For their captain.
Until they do this, Captain SOL can't, Saul can't finish his part of the plan, and they need to do it for him.
Cut to Soldier One Leg getting kicked through a wall by Lao Ji.
And starts to have a little bit of a flashback where, they find, it's where the newspapers are falling, and they find out that, Doflamingo isn't in the Shishibukai anymore, so now he's just a regular pirate, so everything's going to be perfect.
And Saul's like, well, no, this is clearly bullshit. He starts trying to talk to Rebecca, who's freaking out because she's sick of the slave life, because who wouldn't be?
Yeah, and starts talking about the undefeated Kairos, who's nothing but a lie. He's just something that they invented to give them hope.
Because nobody even remembers the guy, so how could he have existed?
Yeah.
I also, in this thing, I did not realize that Rebecca is as young as she is.
Yeah, she's
16.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's One Piece, and Nami, who looks, you know...
I think Nami is also 16.
No, like, Nami's, after the time skip, I think she's 21 now or something like that.
Is she?
No, she was like 16 when the manga started. And it's only been 3 years.
Well, she's, that would make her 19.
Oh, so. She was 18 at her debut and 20 after the time skip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Luffy was
the youngest. But Vivi was also similarly super young.
Yeah.
But anyways, like, now she looks like impossibly milfy, as opposed to, like, you know, 21.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you there. I'm just saying that, like, Rebecca looks really young, or, like, really old for how young she apparently is.
Yeah, again, One Piece world.
Anime. Yeah. People are, like, fully grown at 12.
Like, in an episode where we've talked about Shokei no Soma, I'm not sure this is, you know, this passes the smell test.
Some banging first-year high schoolers in that.
Fair point.
So Rebecca's freaking out because, like, she can't take this anymore, and she's going to enter the tournament today, and she is going to win it just to get the hell out of there.
And then the soldier gives up on her and leaves.
Well, it's not, so, like, she snaps at him.
Yeah, and he's like, okay, whatever.
I think it's the you're not my father thing.
Yeah.
That you'll never beat Doflamingo. So he's like, okay, whatever. I hope you make the right decision.
And so she's
thinking about him and, you know, launches herself at Diamante and doesn't do a damn thing.
Well, I love before that when we see the soldier beaten that Lao Ji is making a G with his arms in the background. I found that really funny.
I did not make that connection.
Yeah, she doesn't do anything to Diamante.
So I don't understand this series of panels where, like, Rebecca takes a swing.
Oh, what thing?
Well, she takes a swing at him and he's like, well, you didn't even come at me with, like, a sharp sword. What the hell, how are you doing?
Well, no, that's the thing is that she has always won by doing ring outs. She deflected other people and whatnot, but she's just so angry right now thinking about Soldier One Leg that she went to attack, even though I guess she knew it would do nothing.
It's the next series of panels I don't understand. Where like, they show a club and a belt and a wallet?
No, he remember his fabric power.
Yeah, he opens a little thing.
He's, like, keeping weapons folded up in his pocket, and he pulls one out and, like, reforms it into a mace.
Oh, okay. I thought he was still using his sword, because it wasn't terribly obvious what weapon he was using.
Yeah, he just, like, he pokeballs a mace. He just pulls one out and...
And okay. It flaps up, and then he, you know, grabs it and beats her over the head with it.
Because it's kind of, like, obscured in every shot after that.
Yeah. It's, like, motion-lined.
So Rebecca takes a straight-up hit and...
And smashes her armor.
And then, what was his name? Lucy tells Bartolomeo that he has to protect that girl.
Yeah.
And Diamante starts taunting her with how he killed her mother.
I also love that Lucy...
If you get, it's an 8-year story told in a sitcom.
And then a spinoff about meeting fathers.
Yeah, yes. And so then something's happening with Pika off screen, basically, or this is syncing up the time, which is where Pika is confronting them, because I guess we don't necessarily know when all of these things are lining up.
Well, he says he must be running wild already, so I assume that means he's fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is just like a time check-in of, like, this is going on while they're fighting Pika.
So the Kabuto beat our dwarves. Pick up Soul and, like, try to urge him back into fighting.
The Kabuto Beetle with the big nose?
Yes. With the giant nose.
I'm so glad I went back there.
Uso Land is shaking Leo, trying to get, like, why do you care so much about the captain? He's just a toy. And Leo explains that ever since everybody got turned into a toy, like, the very first person was Soul.
And Sugar forgot to make a contract with him.
So he is the only toy who's been fighting back all this time.
So I guess they don't know that?
Yeah, because he's been going
to the toy house every night.
And he's the guard for the stadium or whatever his official job was.
Yeah. So, like, they probably would have, like, you know, forced a contract with him or, you know, tried to kill him if they had known.
Yeah. But, I'm assuming he told the dwarves this, which is how they know, and so they say, though no one remembers anymore, when he was a big person, his name was Kiros, the strongest gladiator in the history of the Colosseum.
Which I guess is supposed to be, like, a revelation?
But yeah.
I mean, it's a revelation the same way that it was a revelation that Rebecca was actually his daughter and all that other sort of stuff.
It's things that they have hinted at for so long that we kind of assumed, but this is the confirmation.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, yeah, he'll be a big asset once they make him not a toy.
I wonder if he'll still be missing a leg.
Who knows?
But yeah, so basically everything hinges on them
knocking
out
sugar.
Yeah. So they can't afford to mess up, which I guess is where Usopp's going to step up.
Well, no, I'm going to call it now. He's going to end up, you know, taking, like, he knows that now Treble is right next to Sugar, so nobody's going to be able to get to Sugar without him doing that, because, you know, they blew up the, they don't have the little spicy grape anymore, do they?
No.
So I think that he's going to take this as, you know, he goes to Robin, says, look, you knock out Sugar, I will take care of Treble. And that's when that's when Usopp's going to be stepping up this arc.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean,
I can see Usopp hitting Treble with the spicy grape, like finding it and hitting it with him, and that just sets him on fire and blows up everybody.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if Treble himself is explosive, since his gunk is explosive, and he's kind of dripping with it.
I would assume he is.
I mean, he's like a walking nuke standing next to Sugar. They might just use that to knock her out.
Yeah, I'm surprised they even kept with the story. I assumed it would go somewhere else, and it managed to still keep up a good pace.
Yeah, no, I'm liking that they're sticking with it a little bit longer. It makes it feel, I don't know, more cohesive.
I think, you know, I don't think we're going to jump next week. I think we're going to see the conclusion of the Sugar storyline before we move over again.
So you think that they're actually going to knock the people out before we jump over, and then it'll probably go back to Luffy and crew?
We'll probably get, like, Sugar knocked out, and then see a silhouette of Kiros, and then it'll jump, and we won't talk about the toys turning into humans again, because it'll jump back in time.
So do you think Luffy told Sabo to protect Rebecca, or this is part of the plan he came here with the Revolutionary Army for?
I think that this is Sabo just being a good person.
Calling it on the fly of, like, this girl needs our help. Let's go.
Yeah,
I think part of it is that. I think most of it is that they're going to need someone to run this kingdom afterwards.
True, yeah. Then again, was the Revolutionary Army necessarily coming here with the specific intent of taking down Doflamingo? Because they don't seem to be terribly oriented on that.
I mean, they're a Revolutionary Army. I assume they
revolutionize. That's kind of what Revolutionary Armies do.
Well, but the point is, if they were going to be doing that, the army would be here instead of two or three people.
This might just be like the ground team, you know, get in first.
I mean, there's multiple people there. So
Koala, they have spies.
But that's three people, is all I'm trying to say.
I'm sure there's more. Yeah.
It'd be cool if we saw Dragon by the end of this arc.
It would be neat. That, like, that was actually one thing that, what's his name? Oda did, I think, tweet about that or something like that, that there, like, not everybody involved in this arc has been revealed yet or something like that, so.
Yeah, Dragon would be cool if he shows up for the Doflamingo fight or something. I assume they're going to need more firepower for Doflamingo.
We've never actually seen Dragon fight. Do we know if he can? Or
we know he has, like,
he was around when the lightning hit the scaffolding. And the implication is that he caused the lightning, which, you know, hit the scaffolding, which is what saved Luffy.
That was so long ago.
Yeah, it was back in, it's Rogue Town is what it's supposed to be, or is it Loge Town?
No, it's Logue Town, like prologue.
Okay.
Logue Town.
Yeah, I think like they actually, the subtitle or slogan of the town is like Town of Beginnings and Endings.
That's
yeah.
Right, okay.
Prologue and epilogue.
Yeah.
I bet you that's where the end of the series takes place too.
I could see that, like another execution.
Yeah.
All right. We've talked way too much about manga.
It has been a long week, and we, you know, added a couple extra series, so.
So yeah, next week we're going to go more over Shokugeki no Sama, and we will officially catch up to where the newest English releases are.
And officially marking the burial of Beelzebub with its replacement.
Yeah.
Taking.
Did we figure out what day or when we're going to have a Beelzebub eulogy?
Probably.
Well, there's
week.
Supposed to be some week where it's not, we're coming up on Golden Week sometime.
Yeah, I'd like to either use Golden Week or a week where we don't have much to cover.
Yeah, well,
we're not going to forget about that. That's going to happen
at
we're
some
still
point.
Wearing our armbands that say Babu on them. I'm still like really starting to get like I'm going through the stages of grief with Beelzebub being gone, especially this week now that it's like we're not talking about it because it's dead.
What are you talking about? We're talking about it right now.
From that time Oga did that thing.
I'm gonna go like frame a picture of Oga with like the little black corners on it and hang it above my mantle.
You're gonna go punch somebody into a wall.
Yeah, it for his memory.
All right. This has been your Friday, February 28th Jumpcast. Guys, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We'll see you all next time. It's a picture of Kabuto. It says, don't believe his lies, and like several other pictures of Kabuto.
Believe this one lies.
This one, just big nose written on the back of one of them.
Oh god, I should make that gif. The guy flipping it over writing big nose.
I think we're the only ones who enjoy that joke so much.
I remember, like, there's this weird cognitive dissonance field where like they're announcing new characters for Naruto and I'm like, oh, they should put Big Nose Kabuto in. I'm like, wait, we're like the three people that would put that in or even remember that or even realize the joke.
And then like, I feel like you're all disappointed that he wasn't in it.
You go up to like any like hardcore Naruto fan and be like, huh, Big Nose Kabuto, remember that one time they showed pictures of Kabuto and one of them was kind of dumb looking?
Like, I'd legitimately go to a con just as Big Nose Kabuto if anyone would understand it. They'd be like, hey, that's a kind of off Kabuto cosplay, but, you know, A for effort.
Good attempt at a Kabuto.